But it's working. Let's take a pause. When we get back, my guest will be Larry Elford. You've probably been hearing these stories about TD Bank using aggressive sales tactics to be able to bamboozle their clients. Well, there's a bigger issue at play here, of financial deception and an industry that isn't necessarily set up to be able to work on behalf of clients to resolve their issues. We'll find out about that when we return on News Talk 770. Stay with us. Hey, welcome back. Now, we have not done a segment on all the allegations being raised about TD Bank using aggressive sales tactics. I'm a customer of TD Bank, and I've never had a problem with them. And so I just wondered if it was the case that you have a lot of people who were hired in the day when we needed to do a lot of services at the teller. And as we shifted to ATMs, they got asked to do higher and higher value work for their bank. And some people are not cut out for sales, let's face it. And that maybe it was just some disgruntled employees feeling like they were being asked to do something that was outside their comfort zone. So that's sort of why I hadn't gotten into it. But I think there's a bigger problem in this industry about how those who are relying on their banks for investment advice, are they getting it? Are they being put into inappropriate vehicles because it makes more money for the bank or for the investment advisor and it's not in their best interest? If you've got a complaint about how your investment portfolio is being managed, are there appropriate avenues that you can turn to get it addressed? Maybe not so much. That's what we're going to talk about with my next guest. He sent me over this clip from former TD Bank CEO Ed Clark that I think frames the discussion that we want to have on this. But if you've got any issues that you want to raise about where you would turn to if you feel like you have been taken to the cleaners, or you feel like your investment advisor or the bank that you're dealing with has not treated you appropriately, I'd be interested in hearing that, because I'm trying to put into context just how serious a problem this is from a customer point of view. 403-974-8255. But first, let me just play you this clip from former TD CEO Ed Clark.
I think as part of that, though, you have to understand that business models themselves create their own culture, demand a certain culture. And so if you really do start a business model that says, my clients aren't my clients, they're really counterparties that I can make money off, you shouldn't be surprised that you're going to end up a culture that's a pretty greed culture that really doesn't do the right thing all the time because you start with a business model that's wrong.
So how many companies do start with this wrong business model? Well, I'm joined by Larry Elford. He's an investment malpractice analyst for clients, lawyers, and legislators. He also previously spent 20 years inside the halls of RBC and Scotia Wealth Management Division. So he's seen it from the inside. He joins me now. Larry, thanks so much for being with me.
Thank you, Danielle. Pleasure.
Put into context for me the stories that we've been hearing about TD Bank. Is it just some disgruntled employees, or is there a bigger problem?
It's much bigger. In the 90s, the banks took over the investment industry in Canada by buying up all the major dealers, and the culture changed quite a bit. I was an investment salesperson at that time. I'd never seen my license. They called me an investment advisor. And I really was quite proud of my role, and they wanted to convert their 15,000 account managers that they had at the bank at that time, let's say at RBC, they wanted to convert those people into advisors as well, and that didn't sit well with the people who thought they were professionals, but they went ahead and did that anyhow, and they've sort of pushed bank people who used to be account managers and service people at the front rows of the bank, they either forced those people out or pushed them into becoming mutual fund salespersons and calling themselves advisors and various other products. And so it's become quite a money grab for the last 20 years.
Can you talk about that? Because I guess I would have thought that somebody who had been dealing in the front line of customer service would probably be exactly the kind of person that would make a nice transition into being a mutual fund advisor, because they'd bring those same customer service values and ethics to that new job. But is that not what you're seeing?
Those were great people, and that's not what I'm seeing. Those were the people that would help Aunt Martha balance her checkbook and do just about anything to help the client. Now they have become, as TD CEO, former CEO said, they've become counterparties. They've been forced by the bank in a surreptitious manner to call themselves one thing but actually be counterparties to the client's interest. So they're a wolf in sheep's clothing coming to you saying, I can help you with this, Mrs. Jones, the new version, whereas they're actually acting as a counterparty to Mrs. Jones now. They're licensed as commissioned salespersons, and in the investment side of it, not quite so much in the banking side, but in the part I was in, it's a commission sales role, and every commission they get from the client actually harms the client. So it's quite a counterparty or an adversarial relationship, but the customers are not told that it's adversarial. They're told that you can trust me, I'm an advisor.
Wouldn't you say that's the case then? Couldn't you make that same argument out of anybody who is in the investment advising field? I mean, everybody has to earn an income, earn a living.
Yep.
Isn't it everyone who then would be looking at ways in which they could maximize their own revenues? Or is there something different that happens?
There's a higher level for investment advisor. Someone who is licensed in that category has a fiduciary duty, and there's 2,600 of those registered in Alberta.
Yeah.
And they have a duty to do no harm to you, just like the medical community's Hippocratic Oath. And yet there are 26,000 individuals in Alberta who are registered as dealing representatives. That's a salesperson category. And yet they run around on billboards and bus stops advertising that you can trust them because they're an advisor. And what they're doing is they're misrepresenting their title. And I think there'll be class actions and inquiries on that given time, because that's an equivalent deception to the Volkswagen emissions deception. It's simply lying to clients, lying to the public, and using a license category that 26,000 people in Alberta don't possess.
Well, it's a good point, too, because a lot of people would say, oh, I love my teller at my bank, so you already have warm, fuzzy feelings about your bank, so you think that they're going to have the same standard as your investment advisor, that they have to look out for you.
Right.
So where do you see this going? Because I think that this issue is just now cracked open. Certainly with TD, I'm not sure if other banks are being scrutinized in this way. But do we need to see that those 26,000 individuals who are selling themselves as investment advisors sign on to the same kind of protocols as true investment advisors do? Or is there an oversight issue? Do we need to have a different regulatory environment to make sure that customers are being taken care of?
Yes to both. The advisor business has to sign on to distinguish itself as whether it's in the sales business or advice. Advice is not sales, and giving advice is not a selling game, and the selling game is not giving advice, and the investment industry has been able to play that like a shell game with the deception of a false title. That needs to change, and the securities regulatory game in Canada is run by 13 different securities commissions, and they're all paid by the investment industry that they're supposed to police. So the top four people in Alberta share about $2 million a year. Those are regulators I'm talking about at the Alberta Securities Commission. And that $2 million is funded completely by the financial industry that they're supposed to police. So when you're paying that kind of salaries, and there's another 200 people below them, or 180, and there's 1,000 people at just the top four securities commissions in Canada, and there's 13 in total. So we're paying armies of people. And when I say we're paying, I'm saying the investment industry and the banking industry is paying them. And it comes down to almost like the meat scandal in Brooks in 2012, where the regulators can turn a blind eye to things like misrepresentation. They can grant exemptions to the law. They can do virtually anything that the industry asks them to do. There's someone willing to say, yes, sir, I can get that done for you.
Are you seeing evidence that this structure, where the people paying the bills for the regulators, and are you seeing evidence that this structure is causing regulators to turn a blind eye or make exemptions?
Absolutely. If I looked at the number of times they have ignored the law in Alberta, or exempted the law. Ignoring the law would be allowing 26,000 people to misrepresent their license. That's against the law in the Alberta Securities Act. Exempting the law would be allowing people to have a pass to not even follow Alberta securities law. And there are there's more than 10,000 examples of exemptions to the law, which you can buy an exemption to the law in Alberta for a few thousand dollars. You can make $10 billion on one exemption to the law. Imagine how much money you could make if you didn't have to follow the Alberta Securities Act or the law.
I guess what I'm hearing you say is that the only way this will get sorted out is if you have a class action lawsuit on behalf of investors. Is that where you see this going?
Legal, judicial, and political. There's, you know, I've talked to MLAs all the way back to Shirley MacLellan in the 90s on this, and every politician, every finance minister has preferred to ignore this because this is a very large elephant in the room. And when they get elected and have a portfolio to look after it, they don't want to open up that can of worms. So political is one thing. Class actions, I'm talking to class action lawyers across Canada today, as a matter of fact. There's going to be a number of factors that should come together to give Canadians fairness and honesty in the investment system.
Well, Larry, I'm hearing you're not afraid to open that can of worms. Why don't you keep us in the loop if it does end up elevating to that level? I'd appreciate an update from you.
I will keep you posted.
Appreciate that. Larry Elford, investment malpractice analyst for clients, lawyers, legislators, and again, he's seen it from the inside at RBC and Scotia Wealth Management Division. So there you have it. That is kind of the crux of what's going on at TD Bank that is causing the problems. Let me take a pause. When we get back, we're going to switch gears a little bit, but stay with us. News is next on News Talk 770. Okay, guys, you've convinced me that I got to pay a bit more attention to that story. You know, part of it is that my mother-in-law has an advisor through a bank. She's very, very happy with him. So I hadn't really considered that they might be regulated differently. And there, to me, there is a world of difference between having, say, a financial advisor versus a broker. I mean, when you go to a broker, you know, hey, they're going to sell me something and they're going to get a commission for it. So it's very transparent. But if you go to an advisor, and I adore my advisor, by the way, and part of the reason I adore him is he will say, look, I'm not going to put you into something that has the highest MER because that's good for me. He's now switching to fee-based because he wants to be able to manage my portfolio. So that is how different the rules are when you fall under one category versus how it appears they're regulated at the banks. The banks are really more sales-oriented. And so just be aware of that. That just because you love your teller doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to have the same high standard as they would for an outside financial advisor. And I've got a few people just telling me to pass this along to you. Please advise listeners that if these people do something wrong with your money, you can count on battling for at least 10 years to get it back. Another person, my brother-in-law worked for RBC and said that they would fire employees if they didn't sell products. Another comment, my ex-wife used to work for TD. She quit because she was held accountable for sales for sure. They didn't call it that. You got certain points gained and got spiffs for it. I don't know if that was a mistext, but anyway, you had to get certain points and got promoted, I gather, on that basis. And then here's another one. I'm 70, and when I go to RBC and ask for advice on my portfolio, across from me is a 20-something giving me advice, and I don't trust their information. I'm reasonably knowledgeable on my investments, but on the other hand, they've used the same financial advisor since 1985. So, guys, we'll continue to watch that. It's a shame that certain issues have to just be resolved through the courts, as opposed to identifying a problem and solving it through regulation. But that is the nature of my next issue as